Welcome, allies, to Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Oh, we are diving for the winter solstice, whoa, and it reminds us of Santa's wink, reminding us that he is really Odin, one eye looking in, one eye looking out, and that is so resonant for now. So, yes, before I bring in our fabulous guest, the return of Yahya Lababidi, one of my favorite humans, Egyptian poet and aphorism genie, let me do a little bit of weaving of context. So I just sent out my announcement, Winter Solstice, tidings of trickster tidings of comfort and joy, because I'll be doing an event on December 22nd in Washington, D.C., but good news for everybody. But then one of our great allies, again, it's part of the greatness of KPFA and this show, the Visionary Activist Show, because we connect all allies. So I love Joe Paulino wrote back when he got the flyer, and it's his poem for Nancy Pelosi. Let's compost all harumphitude beforehand, but it's a really good poem. He says, "For years, they would spit out this woman's name as if expectorating something bitter. Now, back, beyond a doubt, no quitter, more than prepared to beat you at your game. As cameras roll, we catch the penile pride erupting in a briefing paper toss. Just shut it down. You show that bitch who's boss a wall, but you're the only one inside. So what's a man to do about this thing? A woman whose main goal is not to please. A woman who says no, not on her knees. Don't underestimate," she said, "the strength I bring." While Pence sits quietly, not even twitching, just wishing she was barefoot in the kitchen. It's really great. Thank you, Joe, a great ally who will be helping us put the Visionary Activist Archives into accessibility. Yay, 23 years on the air. And as you know, we are in Fund Drive. This is the last day for the Visionary Activist Show on Fund Drive. So let me do a little pitch and then we will head into real show. But we are offering Trickster Training Council seasonal membership. It meets every Monday, you know, on the phone or web at 6 p.m. East Coast time. It's recorded. You know, lots of people listen later to everything. That's how it's going. To weekly ongoing astro-mytho-political phone web council with me, Caroline Casey. And that's for a pledge of $200. There you go, just like everybody, really, or $20 a month. And for reasons we'll be explaining with Yahya, we love attribution, so he's set up a site with some of his beautiful aphorisms on products, and I will be tossing in one of his tote bags that he will tout his tote bags as a gift for anybody who signs up for Trickster Training Council for a pledge of $200. We also have the Visionary Activist Show tote bag. If fascism arises in the absence of magic, then let magic rise. 100% cotton, all purple, 15 inches by 16 inches, $60 or $10 a month. There you go. And Suzanne DeVeuve, original art by local artists printed on tote bag. That's for a pledge of $100. And then the wild card, because I like to give everything to the team, an astrological reading with me for a pledge of $1,000. Only one of those. There we go. Any or all of these things can be yours, and you can give them away. You could give the reading away. You could give a subscription to, you know, cultivating our citizen trickster. You could give it as a gift, a great gift. Any or all of these things by calling 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-HEY-KPFA, or pledging online securely. There we go. All right, so we welcome the return of Yahya Lababidi, Egyptian poet and aphorism genie, that we may say a lot in a little. It's, again, the Saturn-Jupiter thing. By focusing in, inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. There we go. One of my favorites, he says, in the deep end, every stroke counts. Ooh. Because the thing about aphorisms, and especially, you know, he is, there's a lot of room around them. You know, it really opens the door to, ooh, mystery. So aphorisms are an ancient form, but its current day master is Yahya Lababidi, says poet Richard Blanco. We are also covering attribution as good ally etiquette. We will play with that. Yahya Lababidi's latest book, Where Epics Fail, was featured on PBS's NewsHour and generously endorsed by Obama's inaugural poet, according to Poet Laureate of Vermont. It resonates in plain-spoken yet dazzling poetry, sometimes epigrammatic, sometimes expansive. His first book, Signposts to Elsewhere, I have it right here, was selected as a 2008 Book of the Year by The Independent. And also just some of the raves are great. It was said, from Nietzsche to belly dancing, I don't think I have that one, I must get it, in a series of literary dialogues with Alex Stein, the artist as mystic, and it goes on. It goes on. So welcome, Yahya Lababidi.
Thank you. I'm listening to your full and pregnant intro, and I'm thinking I should just maintain a meaningful silence after all that, and let all that from the Pelosi poem onwards.
Right, the Pelosi poem is really skillful. It's very good, and it came back immediately after I sent the thing out, and I go, just thank you so much to Joe. That was really adorable, but because we're all in this dream together. There we go, and that's why I also said, compost your hermaphrodite about Nancy Pelosi. Because, yeah, so we can do aphorism poker, but I don't know if mine count, but I like to say, let's leave room for others to behave in unexpectedly appropriate ways, right?
Yes. Yes, and yours always count. In fact, not only do they count, you help rewrite aphorisms. And since we last spoke, I feel like you were absolutely spot on about one where I had fighting language, and you showed me the error in my ways. And I think, what was I thinking? Why fight instead of protect? But that's to be continued.
Well, let's put it on the table, because I like it so much. You had, and it's on one of your coffee mugs, but
it is.
It's where there are demons is where there's something worth, you said, fighting for. And I said, how about protecting?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I have it in front of me, and I've crossed out fighting for. So it's where there are demons, there's something precious, worth, and now it is protecting. And if I could publish the book over again, perhaps in a second edition, I think I'm going to go with yours. First of all, because it's one word versus two. And secondly, right, because it's a much more sacred, meaningful word than fighting for. They're like this whole business with the war against this, the war against that. Why the war? So I see it, and I regret not having seen it earlier. But now I do.
That's part of why. That's why there's more than one of us, and we're in conversing. We're all in this giant turning together, and you know it's also good for protecting. Not protecting, but it's also, you know, dancing can sometimes be substituted. But it's true, because you're not ending with four, which is a dangling participle. There we go.
That's true.
Yeah, and then in keeping with our guiding sky earth story today, there's such beauty available, and I said the sun, you know, or Venus, actually, the sun is a quintile, the moon quintile is irresistible eloquence, may it be available to all beings, and so you know, I like to say metaphors are the incarnational garb whereby power enters the world, and some things are always true, but they're, you know, so that's even more wonderful to host yourself. So there's so many that I love, but part of our backstage to bring on stage, because we'll share everything, and we are.
Oh,
two
there's so much backstage. Yes, there's so
right,
much backstage.
That, well, we were all backstage now together, even with our dedicated listeners.
Yes.
And we are two Librans with the moon in Virgo.
True.
So we're both born at the dark of the moon, and the moon in Virgo is called the language crafting moon. And since we're all in this dream together, everybody who's listening can resonate, and whatever you like, you can, you know, aspire, or, you know, all these qualities are available. So yes, and so you had mentioned something crucial, I think, you know, is dear to my heart. You had said that you had noticed that people, well, here's your quote. You said you found around 40 items on Amazon using words of yours without permission or attribution to sell their products. So you have started your own business to take aphorisms back. But this is important. Yeah.
This also is backstory that we're bringing to the foreground, because I remember in a previous conversation, we sort of touched on this idea of attribution, and I shied away from it and said, oh, you know, one owns nothing, least of all their ideas and their words. And you gave me a gentle but stern look in your studio of marvels. I will not forget it. I forget I forget what happened this afternoon, but I remember that look, and I think, and I thought, she's telling you something. She knows something, and she's wordlessly communicating something to you. Well, and now I found myself in this situation, you know?
Well, I think it's good, you know, for all of us now, you know, this diving for the Saturnalia, and it's traditionally when people would make Saturn dedications, and also this particular solstice is a full moon, the moon in Cancer, Big Mama sign of protecting life, opposite the sun in Capricorn, which is how do we tease protection of life into wise governance. So it's also useful just to put down some vetting standards. So we've been kind of working on honing on this, because I too have every now and then come across people who've kind of hoovered whole paragraphs of mine and passed it off as their own, or quips that I've honed that they didn't know what they meant, but they hoovered them up. Yeah. So what I came to understand, or here's my Saturn, is that to not attribute is the linguistic equivalent of genetically modified food, because like genetically modified food, it cuts the DNA, it cuts the guiding from our ancestors, and when people hoover things that they have not crafted, those sayings are very lonely, and they've been cut off from their history. You know, so it's part of we want to, you know, invite intimacy back into the world and attribution. And I had confessed to you backstage, because this is an interesting thing. I go, I remember as a child, I did plagiarize. In third or fourth grade, I copied, you know, the devil song out of Damn Yankees and handed it in, and knowing one was going to get caught, and then the teacher said, blah, blah, and I was like, oh, I lied. I plagiarized, and then I lied. I was like, oh, I thought we were just supposed to write out something we liked. But it was that cold shame. And then the other time was my brother is a renowned writer. And as a little girl, he's much older, I thought, well, he's the writer. So I hoovered
he's
a grown up. I hoovered some of his writing and handed it in as my own, maybe sixth grade, you know. And the teacher said, your writing is usually so much better than this, Caroline. I don't know what happened. Anyway, so we know the impulse.
It wasn't your native tongue,
Right. Well, we know the impulse to hoover, you know, and to go, oh, and people say, oh, you should be flattered that people, you know, hoovered your words, or, you know, I could have thought of it myself. Anyway, so now just back to, you know, genetically modified food and keeping the lineage in place, right?
Yeah, I think I see it slightly differently, having sort of heard you make the case, and it will go back again to the modification regarding the opening aphorism of taking fighting for and replacing it with protecting. So I'm not fighting for my words, I'm protecting them, and not because they're strictly mine, but because, again, I know their belonging. I know their family. I know their roots. I can vouch for them. Whereas whoever ran off with them, I like this idea of them being lonely. So I found myself in a situation where, for whatever reason, something I'd written, an aphorism I'd written, certainly not my finest, in 2012, it was brought to my attention that it had gone viral, whatever that means. So it struck some sort of chord on Tumblr, which I don't use and I'm not familiar with. And then a year later, it was brought to my attention again in another context that my name had been dropped from it. And I thought that's very interesting, because it is a compliment in some ways, if you know, for the weak ego and vanity. You think, and then you think, oh, maybe to be unanchored from the name is kind of liberating. But then you think, in whose name is it? Because it's also taken other people's names along the way. And I think, could they stand up and speak for it knowingly and with love? And that's the thing. And I let it go for a few.
Whoops! Oh, did we lose you? No, never mind. That's just, you dropped out for a second, but now you're back. Yeah.
I started off somewhere in 2012 until last month, when I did sort of think, oh, maybe I will, you know, look into putting some of my stuff out. And I found that someone had beat me to it all over the place, not just Amazon, with basically these aphorisms without attribution or permission on baby clothes, on aprons, you name it. And I thought, no, maybe I should step up now and claim them.
Well, yeah, and then we'll compost all of this in a moment. But you know, I've crafted and use and, you know, better a trickster than a martyr be. You know, it's part of central to my dedication. You know, and somebody had at first, you know, praised me for that, and then hoovered it and passed it off as their own. But I go, okay, all right, trickster, we'll take care of this. There's no need for me to step in. And they were on a show, and somebody said, well, what do you mean by that? You know, what do you mean by trickster? And they said, well, imagine I'm a high school principal, and I give you permission to be creative. I'm like, no.
Yeah. And
anyway,
that's it.
You have no idea. But it was their undoing. So some spicy. But it's also a great friend of mine years ago. Because we remember these things. Right?
Ownership is just that you can speak for it differently, more knowingly.
Yes, but what I was going to say is a great ally, Barbara Goodrich Dunn, I'm attributing, said, when people flatter you, they're paying you for what they're about to take. It's like,
Oh, yes. Really, I agree. Oh, I'm wary of flattery. And I think I may have an aphorism somewhere which I can't quote because I don't remember the exact words, but it has to do with the expectation that flatterers sort of expect to be flattered in return. And you have to be very cautious around that. So the Persians are good in maintaining some sort of a distance where they recognize that he who praises and he who blames lies twice. In the sense of neither that great high nor that, you know, great condemnation and wagging finger, neither of those strictly belong to me. Those exaggerations are suspect somehow, both extremes.
Right, but I'm happy every winter solstice, and especially now because there's so much dire beauty in the world. You know, it's traditionally, you know, and I learned the chant from Starhawk, you know, in the 80s. It's just the longest night, the wheel is turning, what will we give to the night? And then people toss things in, but now I'm adding, we toss things in and we ladle things out. So we might toss in flattery, but ladle out praise, which is the authentic good thing. We can feel the difference, right?
Oh, I see what you flattery, mean. I think they mean by praise flattery in this context.
Ah, well, we'll set them straight. It's something to play with, you know, all of us, yeah. Really. What do we want to throw into the cauldron, and what do we want to ladle out? You know, tossing corruption into the cauldron, ladling out dedication to collective well-being, you know. I do want to say also that, you know, there is so much dire, and the rate of human destruction of our earth and our kin is so huge. But there is, Nat Geo just aired its movie Paris to Pittsburgh. It's available for free download, and I just want to do a little pitch to that because we are centered.
I'm jotting it,
you know,
down.
We are a nerves. Yeah, no, it's really good because it's again the critique. And then so many good people. It's a rousing neck and neck time, and it's why we say beauty is stronger than tyranny.
at the risk of flattering / praising you, after what we've just said, this is one of the things I really appreciate in speaking to you, Karen. Is this, first of all, the savoring of words. Because words mean things and they stand for ideas, and then also always siding on the side of goodness somehow. I don't know if goodness is the correct word. Maybe altruism. Maybe, you know, this incorruptible faith in the best of us, whatever that means, or everything that means. And it's encouraging to hear this, especially when things get darker.
Yes. Yeah, and darkness is a widely serviceable metaphor. There's the deep nourishing dark. You know, here we are, we're diving into the dark, and then you know, dark as spooky and hidden, both. You know, and but yeah, so we're tossing toxic mimics into the cauldron, ladling out the authentic. Well, you know, just to prime the pump, you know, all the articles that we read, you know, it's useful to have this cauldron. Pluto gives us this metaphoric, and it's useful to literalize, too. So Los Angeles is putting some bold things on its table about, you know, why not have free public transportation to ease, you know, traffic congestion. We go, what a good idea. Traffic congestion into the cauldron. Free public transport out. There we go. So it is, you know, it's a word play, energy play time, you know, in this throwing things into the dark cauldron and ladling things out. And I also like to make the distinction between sarcasm and irony. You know, sarcasm means to bite and harm, right? So we throw sarcasm into the cauldron and ladle out irony. Irony is the capacity to hold two stories at once, and then hence compassion even more. But you have things to say. I mean, I've
not
underlined many things here.
Not necessarily. I'm interested in listening primarily.
No. Let me.
I have less and less to say, but I am appreciating all of this. So, give me a nudge in the direction I need to go.
Oh right. Well, no, that's right. Well, I can read your aphorisms because it is tasty. Now, I remember growing up with La Rochefoucauld. Is that someone that you read?
Absolutely. He was the aphorist. He was the one, I mean, even though I started with Nietzsche, who led me to La Rochefoucauld, and Schopenhauer, who also, I mean, he was the one. And it was biting and tight and just right.
Yeah. Okay. Does one arise in your mind offhand, Andy Peng?
I am distant from him now. Because it was also, there's also a cynicism that he was very good at, and I'm very afraid of that now, maybe as inner threat, maybe as whatever. But I think of something he said along the lines of, you know, I don't know, some great pleasure we take in our friend's misfortune or something along those lines. He's very good. He's sort of a very social intelligence who was... extreme as a technician of the aphorist, he maybe cannot be improved upon. But what he stands for, as I understand it now, I shy away from that territory spiritually. That's why I don't want to volunteer any. But I'm happy to hear whatever you have to offer from him.
I don't either. But I do like distilling that when you say a little too cynical, right? Cynis from Dante's dog that's biting its tail in hell, right? Cynicism into the cauldron, you know, liberating something out, you know. But I also, you know, and sometimes, you know, we are both on Twitter. You are at Yahya Lababidi. I'm at Stand Up Coyote. And, you know, social media, you've written about it, you know, can be many things. But it can also be a place where we kind of hone, you know, and even with the, you know, comment sections into the cauldron, the worst of humanity. But sometimes, you know, it's where I've kind of honed things going, you know, Snark is to run on the energetic equivalent of tar sands oil. Very happy with that. Snark, well, it's all back to our trickster selves, and you very much this way, which is, you know, what is imprisoning, that's the con, and what is liberating, that's the liberating trickster. And I do have a whole category of prison disguised as freedom. There's many interesting examples, but I think that's useful in our language, like when we were talking about, you know, fight and other, you know, and trickster would say, we are big gods dancing with you all, we don't care what you do, we care the manner in which you do it, that it come from freedom and choice, you know, so that we have an expanded vocabulary, so we don't tiptoe around, like never use the word fight, but we have 20 words we could use, and we go, I choose this in full awareness that fight is a very hot word in an already overheated planet, and it costs a cascade of adrenaline to download. But Yeah, but it is an interesting challenge to do that. But so I do love, you know, and I quote to people, and I've gotten people to buy your book even when I'm doing readings for them.
I believe you have.
Well, I have, and doing a reading for a wonderful woman, and just as a little thing, I'm donating a reading to KPFA for a pledge of $1,000. It's a wild card thing, but I am doing really great work in private sessions. But it was a woman who, again, was crafting and working on saying a lot and a little, and I said aphorisms, and she's like, oh, right, aphorisms. Mm. And she went out and bought your book immediately because I said that you were a great mentor in this realm. And so we go, right, to say a lot in a little. So I do love In the Deep End, Every Stroke Counts.
I keep returning to that now. I mean, especially without being sort of dramatic about it, but whether it's the Pelosi poem and everything that entails, or where I come from, where I don't fully understand where we're going, and by that I mean Egypt and the region, mm-hmm. I do think that a greater mindfulness is called for, and by that, just sort of understanding that it's deep now. It's deep, and one has to be extra careful because you haven't been careful in the past, because you've been your card for unconscious living has been revoked. Living as you have, and I say this about my own people. And now I'm an American, of course, so I'm allowed to sort of very meekly critique from the sidelines. But I'm not saying the problem is only here. The problem is everywhere, and it's connected, as we know. So, yeah, if one has chosen not to pay attention, one can't afford to do so now because one has checked out in the past. So In the Deep End, Every Stroke Counts, in every sense, for all of us, really, in many ways, even spiritually, I mean, without talking about politics altogether.
Right. Well, and that's why your one, you know, where there are demons is where there's something worth protecting, right? Oh, see how nice that is? That's really great.
Yeah, I know. Much improved, Carolyn. I honest to goodness can't wait for the next reprinting of the book so that I can scribble that out, because I'm thinking I never cared for, as a pacifist, as a violent pacifist, I never cared for that language, you know, the war against this, the war against that. So what business do I have talking about fighting for? I think I meant struggle. And even then, it's improved to leave that out and talk about protecting, you know, guarding what is sacred. That's much finer. Good call, good ear.
Well, yeah, and it's a great word. It means, you know, for a shield, protect is to put a shield in front of something. And we owe a great deal of gratitude to Standing Rock, who composted through the word protest into the cauldron and ladled out protector, which is a great liberation, I think, because protest comes from testes and everything, and it means to affirm. So it was always a linguistic befoiblement in some way. But yeah, protecting is so good,
and it's massive. That's also massive.
Well, I like, you know, when people say, how long will we have war? And I go, as long as we keep having war metaphors. I'm also very fond of tossing the word vulnerable into the cauldron, because it comes from the battlefield. It means woundable, and people have been conned into thinking it's an intimacy assist. And it means woundable, which I think is not a great relationship standard, you know. Love makes you vulnerable. No, obsession makes you vulnerable. Love is good for everybody. And then somebody I was talking with about this was slightly harumphy and was like, oh, well, what do you suggest as an alternative? And I go, well, it's not equivalent, but we could ladle out available, you know. Love makes you available. It's kind of fun. Yeah, I like available. I like replacing vulnerable with available. And
it's light. It's light and deep at the same time. Nietzsche has a great line about the ancient Greeks who he would turn to every once in a while. He said those Greeks were superficial out of profundity. They knew to stop at the surface and the fold of things. So there's something about available that doesn't make things, you know, too heavy, because it knows just how heavy things can be. Available. I'm wide to receive. Here I am.
That's great. And then just ricocheting in our play, I love a friend of mine said the fun, slightly mean quote about Henry James, he always chewed more than he bit off. Got this.
Really right. Yes.
It's good because we like
there's
spice.
Juice,
we do like spice.
There's juice and viciousness too. Yes.
Well, I don't know if it's vicious, but it is. It is. Well, does it feel liberating? That's the thing. And again, that's, you know, as we are language mavens, you know, so, you know, kind of, and letting words bubble up. So, and I have, you know, and we have screensavers and etymology dictionaries online, and it makes it so easy now. And recently, just the word wafted across my screen, ebullient. And I go, ebullient, that's great. Mm. It means kind of bubbling up with enthusiasm. Yeah. And we go, yes, let ebullience come out of this cauldron, you know, and to waft into the world that, because the language makes what it describes available, right? So just even saying the word ebullient, people go, yeah, well, haven't felt that way in a while.
Language is something that I mean, that's sort of back to politics, because we must address this world in its terms. The corruption of language is when we enter dangerous territory, when we are vulnerable to the corruption of values and meaningful exchange. Because when words lose their meaning, then what? Then where do you go? Then what do you have as touchstone and foundation? When truth is untruth, when this is subject to question. I mean, words matter, and you see it when people sort of begin to manipulate that. You that's the first reason to sort of, not for alarm, because we don't want to be alarmed, but to just pay attention and think, here language is being betrayed. What next?
Right. And then, you know, there is the trickster, because I was doing many courses, I think 6 courses with the Shift Network, to whom I'm very grateful. I mean, they put a wonderful team of people together. But it is that, you know, it's like we're having ancient meeting modern and spiritual meeting marketing and branding, and it's a riptide, right? And so, you know, I'm pretty careful about, or I love language, and so I love the word liberating. I love it as a gerund. I love putting it in front of all of our names. I love liberating Yahya Lababidi, you know, because it means, you know, setting you free, but also the intrinsic quality that is liberating about you. And I noticed they were beginning to incorporate the word liberating in front of people's courses, that some of whom I knew were not liberating. And so I got into a slight harumphitude and went on my own journey going, you know, and I go, liberating's been turned into a brand. Should I give it a little funeral? You know, oh dear. And then I go, no, I love that word. I love that word. And then I came back, trickster guided me back going, no, the word is stronger than the brand. And wherever it's used, it will liberate that. And it's like, oh, there we go. So we do a little tour into our harumphitude, and then and then trickster guides us back out going, right, because we can feel, you know, I mean, I don't know if you work with people who are, you know, or editors or whatever, but sometimes when it's go, no, not the right word, no, how about the, you know, and when you get the right word, it's like, yes, it's like high fives in the universe.
Of course.
Right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. And even I mean, you say liberating, and I go back to my teenage self, I don't know, 14, 16, somewhere between those years, and coming across Gubran of necessity, having a Lebanese dad. And I remember reading a review of Gubran, and someone said, there is a liberating thought on every page. And you know, at 14 or however old I was, or young I was, I didn't quite understand fully what that meant. But my whole body responded to that as an opening, as somewhere where I could breathe in a more expansive manner, and I understood what they meant by that. And I thought, there is something freeing in every page. There's something that reminds us of, whether you want to call it your higher self or your possibilities, or even the terminology is small next to the reality of it. But liberating is where you want to be, and however much these words are bandied about or branded as you say, it doesn't really touch them, because again, it's like the example you gave of someone who ran off or hoovered, as you said, quote or a concept that wasn't theirs, so they weren't able to give it all of its echoes and its entire family and lineage. The term itself is much grander than what they wish to confine it in a brand. It'll survive that. It'll break out of its boundaries.
And then just to, because in my mind as you're speaking, it's lots of thoughts, and I go, yes, to Hoover somebody's language is like stealing their dog, right? And then
yeah.
And then I go, but then the dog escapes and comes back home, right? So because
nice.
We want to have that
very
part.
Nice.
There we go. Okay, right? Yeah, So I have many of your aphorisms here. I love them. You know, just even at the beginning of Signposts to Elsewhere, philosophies like roadmaps are not to be consulted while driving. It's very charming. It's very charming. Mm. But also, you know, remind us because that's right, as a response to people hoovering your work
yeah.
without attribution, and that's why we say, let all impediments be an incentive to experimentation. There we
I
go.
Love
and
that.
So,
I really think yeah. that's beautiful. I mean, this concept, and it has many different names, crisis, opportunity, but it's a beautiful concept. And if someone is attuned to that, then you realize that nothing can do you harm. And in this particular case, in this very specific case, I was able to sort of turn this strange business of whoever wanted to, you know, use these aphorisms to sell their product to say, no, maybe we can do our own thing, because I fell down the rabbit hole of lawyers, and lawyers, you know, told me all kinds of things. They said, I don't know, you can have tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands if you sue and the rest of it. And I thought, no, this is it. I don't want to fight. It's too problematic and it's too drawn out. I'd rather create something. And that's where I went in another direction of trying to offer, you know, take those very same things if they seem to resonate with people and put them and liberate them by giving them their home where they belong. In, you know, it so happened to be a place called Society 6, and people can look that up. They do artist-friendly, meaning there's a lot of artists there. But I thought, okay, I'll just take the same aphorisms that have been taken away from me.
Well, and we're going to honor those now. And just, you know, in a reciprocal blessing fest, we are raising money for KPFA, but we're also pitching for Yahya Lababidi. So society6.com/Lababidi, LABABIDI, will take you to his product page. And because, again, you know, impediments as an incentive to expression going, right, so we couldn't, you know, overcome the logistics of offering your book this time as a premia. There we go. but we've figured a way to smuggle things in, which is so for everyone who signs up for $200 for 3 months of Trickster Training Council. It meets on Mondays. There's a secret handshake and a secret Facebook page, optional, but recordings and stuff. But it's profound banter every week. There we go. And honing our skills about how we can be
profound
agents of
banter.
Cool response in a hot, yeah.
We need hot, more profound world. Banter in our lives. I know that.
Thank you. No, that's right. And see, well, wait, where's the thing? A good listener helps us overhear ourselves, you say.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. And, yeah. that's what, I mean, I don't believe when people talk about someone being a good talker, there's no good talking without good listening. Good talkers go to silence to recharge and come back from that capital of riches with something to say. So if you can't listen, then forget about it. Then don't presume to speak.
That's great, and it's not something easily honored on radio. But I love the Greeks were not uncomfortable with silence, as the modern world sometimes is, but
yeah.
because they said, after silence, the next voice that speaks will be Hermes.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So there is. So here's what we're doing. I am buying for everybody who signs up for Trickster Training Council. So that supports KPFA and it supports Yahya Lababidi, and we're being ingeniously playful. So for everybody who signs up for a play,
he's very grateful.
Okay, well, that's good. So let me spit this out here. So for everybody who signs up for Trickster Training Council seasonal membership for a pledge of $200, such a deal, really. I am going to personally buy from Yohia Lababidi's site a tote bag that says one definition of success might be refining our appetites while deepening our hunger. That's good.
I hope so. Yeah, thank you. I'm having an inner dialogue now that you overheard. Yes, I hope we can get there. Thank you, Caroline. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. No, and so anyway, so you can pledge to Trickster Council, whatever it's called, Trickster Training Council seasonal membership. There we go. It's the Compassionate Trickster Experimental Juju Mystery School. But Trickster Training Council, that's what you tell the people in the phone room by calling 1-800-439-5732. And then when I have your emails, I will go purchase this bag, and you could have that one, or there's also a tote bag. I mean, that's pretty good for shopping. One definition of success might be refining our appetites while deepening our hunger. And it goes very well with the Visionary Activist tote bag. If fascism arises in the absence of magic, then let magic rise for a pledge of $50.
Amen.
And then yours is the other one. Well, there's a lot of other tote bags that are kind of more reflectively somber. You can't bury pain and not expect it to grow roots. That's a tote bag, too.
That's not for casual shopping, though. I don't know how these things, how they bounce off people's walls. I mean, this is stuff that I've overheard from my conversations with myself, but the only way I can sort of figure out what works is seeing what has a life outside of me and the books online. So when I see people sharing things, I think, oh, okay, really? That one spoke to you? Then maybe I'll include that one. I don't know if it works in the mall, though. That's another story.
Right. Well, you know, we're smuggling wisdom into the vernacular marketplace. There we go. Like so many of the team and so many people I've been doing readings for, I get to go, oh, so you're smuggling wisdom into mainstream culture disguised as entertainment. Mm-hmm. I go, yes. So there's a whole lot of, we get to see these themes.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Well, you are too, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of the aphorisms, I think, they do a great thing, which is they inspire reflection and conversation. Because on one of your tote bags, it says, to hurry pain is to leave a classroom still in session. And it's like, oh, okay, I release my resistance to that, because I've been so in favor of, substituting for the word trauma, the phrase, my dangerous, beautiful assignment. And I think it was, and it really,
you're so
it really,
good. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it really works well, because it is that redemption lies in brewing medicine for others. But wonderful Rachel Harris, who a guest of show, who wrote a great book, Listening to Ayahuasca. You know, she as a psychologist was like, but you can't hurry people past their, you know, you can't be too fast, which my impulse is, and then we'll just hand them that tote bag. I guess you can't bury pain and not expect it to grow roots is something you might take to the doctor's office, right, rather than shopping at the market. Anyway, let me. But yes,
possibly yes. No. I'm thinking. You've put out a lot, and I'm thinking in between the spaces of what you've said. I would like to read a book of your aphorisms, frankly, at this point, because you're someone who, from the get-go, when I sat down to talk to you, was not surprised by aphorisms as a form, and I believe you have a tendency to speak in that way, and the reason you do that is because you're constantly in conversation with yourself, and you're quoting yourself when you hit upon sort of the leanest version, the neatest, the essence, the core of it. So, you know, maybe the thing we have to look forward to and discuss next is a book of your aphorisms.
What a good idea. That's right. And again, who brought what? And there you have the prolific discipline. And now I'm going to cajole you into cajoling, because I see on our pledge there's people to thank. Lydia in Santa Cruz, thank you so much. And somebody in Occidental, thank you so much. And somebody in Pacifica, thank you so much. And Chaz in Oakland, thank you so much for pledging to the Visionary Activist Show. And now we want to exhort further, as the phone room says, do repeat the numbers, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732. 239-5732 or online kpfa.org. So if you pledge $200 for Trickster Training Council, which you can give as a gift, 3 months, I will buy you, well, what the hell? I'll buy you any one of Lava Beattie's tote bags, but I think one definition of success might be refining our appetites while deepening our hunger is the most useful tote bag. And I will throw that in again for a pledge of $200. There is the always, it goes very well. We're touting totes with the Visionary Activist Show tote bag. If fascism arises in the absence of magic, then let magic rise for a pledge of $60. Again, all these things can be measured out, $200 or $20 a month for 10 months, or tote bag, $60 or $10 a month. And then Suzanne DeVeuve, wonderful original, well, local artist and original art, has a beautiful printed tote bag for a pledge of $100. And then there's the one astrological reading that really jumps up our, you know, for a pledge of $1,000. And I've done this over the years, and it is a contribution, yet another contribution to KPFA and the Visionary Activist Show, because we love gathering this way. So astrological reading with me for a pledge of $1,000. And any or all of those things can be yours by calling 1-800-439-5732. And I can get Yahya Lava Beattie to pitch too, because this is his third guest appearance. So as things, you know, get more intense, we love KPFA and the Visionary Activist Show being flush. That would be good. Being flush would be really darling. So that's, you know, part of our dynamic. But anyway, but again, oh team, I see nobody's calling. You're possibly too mesmerized. We'll aspire to be less fascinating. There we go.
Right.
It'll be challenging.
It'll require great restraint and discipline we might not be equal to.
Right. That's right. Oh, we're going to try and be less fascinating. Snap out of it. Pledge for your dog. Pledge for attribution. Pledge for people who can't. You know, again, 1-800-439-5732. This is the last pledge day in the winter fund drive there. So, you know, show the grown-ups you like this show. I do meet lots of people who come up to me in California going, I know that voice, you raised me, because by Jiminy, it's been on the air for 23 years, this show, you know, and we are grateful for that. So, yes, I see nobody's calling yet. We're still being too fascinating. All right. Do you want to? I'm just gonna mention your aphorisms. Let's do aphorism poker back and forth. But you say spirituality occurs at the boiling point of religion, where dogma evaporates. Oh, that's great. So
yeah, I return to these things, and I wonder. I mean, I stand by this absolutely, and that's where we meet. We meet in the ether. We meet where there isn't, you know, this is right and this is wrong, and put them all on the stove, boil them, and we'll meet up there in the steam. And I mean, I see it. I mean, it's hard to miss now with the whole suspicion of the other, whether it's the immigrant or someone of a foreign faith or the rest of it. But I think where our longings are, where our giant self is where the steam is, and we don't have to give it a name. To define is to limit even, but that's where we meet.
Yes, and I think, you know, to part of what we're up to here is the idea of resonating in each one of our dedicated listeners this capacity now, you know, again, of composting and turning, you know, let us welcome immigrants as pilgrims whose stories we must need, right? If we were to be more Bedouin, you know, again, we want to play this way because it resonates in others, and it also disrupts polarity. That's part of what we're pitching. So then, you know, when you were saying, right, spirituality occurs at the boiling point of religion where dogma evaporates. That's great. And I like throwing, I want to throw orthodoxy into the cauldron, because ortho means straight teachings, and ladle out curvy teachings. We like our teachings curvy very much. And that goes with throwing the overused word impact into the cauldron, going, really, do you want to have an impact? You know, well, we're having a lot of impacts on the Earth, but it's a short, violent encounter. And ladle out influence, long, curvy influence. And we go, there we go. So what would you like to toss into the cauldron?
You know, I'm trying to think now, and I'm not going to my stuff. I'm going more. I'm obsessed with Rimbaud lately, who I'm revisiting, if I'm permitted to. French poet, sure. A bizarre career, 5-year career, really from 15 to 20, is on fire. Sort of overturns French poetry, modern poetry, etc., and then goes silent. Back to silence, and from 21 to 37, when he dies prematurely, does not write poetry. And I've been wondering and thinking again, back to attribution, back to where words come from, what is ours and what isn't, and when are we silent and when do we speak? And I keep returning to this, and this notion of, the first aphorism I have in my new book is, a poem arrives like a hand in the dark. And if I understood this to mean that I was in charge, it wouldn't be a hand and it wouldn't be the dark. So I recognize that guidance is not of, I mean, we can align ourselves in such a manner to receive it, but there's also a humility in acknowledging that we do not summon this. This thing is a sort of grace. It smiles on us when we are just so in the right place to receive it. So I keep coming back to this. I don't know what to say, but I really find myself returning to, especially now with this whole idea of attribution and what is ours and what isn't.
Well, that's good, because we have 6 minutes left, and there's three callers on the line, and now we must return to making money sacred. There we go. It's sacred. It's a Venus thing, you know. And we have what is Venus doing right now? To double. Well, let me back up here. Saturn says to add dedication to anything we do makes it even more magic. You know, by the going to the phone, by the dialing 1-800-439-5732, may all humans have an increasing experience of the effect of their actions on others and be kind to animals. Whatever you want to pitch in there, it's really good. So remember, we are offering thank you gifts. It's the voice of Yahia Lababidi. It's the show for 23 years, really. And then we just throw in these gifts. But any amount is completely welcome. A magic amount, $5, $50, $500, or
like
a wild card thing. I like five is sacred to Venus, you know, and then two times five is 1,000. And that's the, again, I'm offering, you know, again, one astrological reading with myself. It is fantastic, let me tell you. You know, by Zoom or by phone, for a pledge of $1,000 by calling 1-800-439-5732. Only one of those. We have two callers on the line. Let's fill that thing up. There are 490 people listening on the stream. Come on, team. KPFA.org is the place for you, because we have listeners. We have listeners in Syria. We do. And South Africa and Japan and Australia. Hi there.
How marvelous.
Some live, some later, you know, but there we go. And, we go, now there's three callers. It's very exciting. We can see all this. Thank you in Pinole, California, website pledge of $25 a month. Excellent. Beautiful Bonita, hello there, pledge for a KPFA canvas tote. That's true. You can pledge for any old thing that's there online, not just what I'm pitching, right, by calling 1-800-439-5732. So that's pretty great. Ooh, look, it's really picked up here. That's good. Now we have two callers. That's exciting. It's neck and neck. It's like horse races. I can see all these things. I can see you. But again, it would be really great to call 1-800-439-5732 or pledge online to kpfa.org. But money is a great mystery. I'm not going to let you talk for too long about it, but money, Venus is beauty, art, and money, and do we not want to have a, you know, restore money to its sacredness, you know, that we're always voting for reality and everything we buy or purchase is part of our vote?
I never thought of money as sacred. I thought one should fear from money, because I didn't understand it. But I'm coming to an appreciation as an adult, as someone who's turned 45 years ago, that it is part of our reality, and where our intentions are. And so I'm beginning to be less mistrustful of it and recognizing its necessity, that I never thought of it as sacred.
Well, I think that's part of our spicy thing, and it's part of the good-hearted team, you know, KPFA, mm-hmm. Pacifica, the Visionary Activist Show, is that money, sex, death, money, power, Pluto, Scorpio things were all considered sacred once, and then they became taboo. Mm-hmm. And really, it behooves us to restore it to sacred. You know, that money wants to be liberated. Words want to be liberated from the mouths of liars, and money wants to be liberated from those who destroy the world. You know, and to serve community. And that's, I think, really how we can say that. There's three callers. That's great. There's three callers.
That's important. I think. Go ahead. No,
that's good. We're winding down. I think we've got a minute here, but thank you, Art in Healdsburg. That's wonderful. Yay. There's three callers on the line. That's very exciting. I think it's crucial, because, you know, and it's part of the ally etiquette that we began with about, you know, attribution and all. But but ally etiquette also is, you know, that quality of money and resources, you know, that we toss in our fear and taboo about it, that so many good people and good causes, you know, have been snookered. The show I did with Joel Solomon, who's very big on money and everything, I think we came up with the idea at the same time, but a wonderful idea, like with enormous wealth, which part of what he directs is, let's, you know, dissolve the polarity of environmentalists versus loggers and versus fishermen. You know, what they've tried, you know, Dune Lankert was also starting a program in Alaska to pay fishermen to not fish, stay home and read and train as stewards of the ocean. Oh, loggers, we will pay you double what the evil corporation pays you to go home and learn about trees and become tree protectors. You know, it's like, let's siphon enormous amounts of wealth and ideas into ingenious good, you know, and money wants to do good. And it's part of the effectiveness of the Scandinavians, who were really unconflicted about money. And so they just raised several million dollars and said, here, UWA people in Colombia, buy your land. Here's $14 million. You know, and we go,
I'm waking up to this notion of money in good hands can do good. It's not a thing to be feared or the rest of it. I'm slowly coming around to it. But yes, absolutely. I mean, people who are in a position to do good could do greater good with money. And I recognize this as a penniless pauper, that it's time to understand its power.
It is. And also, you know, even the phone room, bless their heart, says your guest is amazing. Mwah, 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 mwah. And give out that number, 1-800-439-5732, because we have 20 seconds. All right. Yo, team, you know, we can do it. The guest is amazing. Yahya Labbabidi is one of my favorite humans in the world. We have three callers on. Make your pledges quickly so the grown-ups give us credit here on the Visionary Activist Show, here for 23 years to bring you the likes of, although there is nobody like Yahya Labbabidi. But we are excited. Extending.
Enlightened child's play.
Enlightened what?
I said honor enlightened child's play.
Ah, yes, that's good. Whatever that means, but we'll address what that might mean in the next show. Okay, team, we're almost out of here. We are out of here. Thanks again to Erica Bridgman. Thank you so much, Yahya Labbabidi, and let's keep our quipping, our profound quipping and banter and aphorisms to and fro, back and forth. Woof, woof, woof.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you, and thank you, team. Yes, keep pledging. There's three callers. You know, that's really great, and we will reconvene next week with Daniel Gemario for the solstice. Woof. Oh, yeah, yeah.